This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills, and also by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at biggreenegg.com and springermountainfarms.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. It is our third and final day of live broadcasting from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. But we have an amazing lineup today. We'll be going from noon to 5 Eastern, so please tune in to heritageradionetwork.org. You can see our full lineup at heritageradionetwork.org/Charleston. Heritage Radio is a member-supported, nonprofit food radio station based in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I'd like to say a big thank you to our sponsors today, Springer Mountain Farms Chicken and Big Green Egg. If you're on the festival grounds, please check out our teepee in the back of the Culinary Village. Just beside our teepee, Rusty Bowers is doing some incredible demos of chicken sausage on the Big Green Eggs. Come check it out. They're delicious. We are also doing a silent auction for a Big Green Egg Mini Max with a complete starter kit. So please come by, bid on that, support Heritage Radio Network. And with that, I would like to turn it over for a very special edition of Beer Sessions Radio.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio. This is a special show. It's March 5th, 2017. We're in Charleston, South Carolina. And I have to tell you, welcome to Charleston. This has been an amazing thing. We met the people that run the Charleston Wine Food Fest last fall with Ted Nelson from Gumbo Marketing up in New York City. And I feel a real privilege that they brought down the Heritage Radio Network crew. So and David's here, Kat and Katie. It's very awesome. So we're going to be on for the next few hours with different guests. We're going to talk about kind of local Charleston scene and the new breweries that are down here. We've got some chefs coming up from Georgia, and then we've got some other chefs and brewers coming in. So, you know, my experience, it was a great day. I flew in to Charleston yesterday, and I oriented myself. And through some contacts in New York, I realized the first stop and the great stop that everyone should make on their way into Charleston is they should stop at Edmunds Oast out in what they call the North Morrison area. So we got the guys from here. You guys introduce yourselves. And we're going to talk about what you guys are doing and some really great places part of the local Charleston scene.
Yeah, thanks for that introduction. My name is Cameron Reed. I'm the brewer at Edmunds Oast. I've been with it since the beginning.
And I'm Timmons Pettigrew. I'm the operations director as of 2 months ago. So,
well, first just jumped let's on talk board. About. So, we're coming into the airport at Charleston, and the region that you guys are in. What is it called? North Morrison.
North Morrison. It's the northern part of the peninsula. So it's a little bit further from downtown, which is nice because you have parking, you have access. You're not sort of fighting the traffic. Not that downtown Charleston isn't a beautiful place to be, but sometimes when you just want a beer or some food or whatever, it's nice to be able to come and park and get out and you know.
And it's really taken off in the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
There's a cluster of interesting places there. What are some of the other neighbors that you have that are doing great food and drink up there?
Yeah, no. So what's really cool is when we opened, our facility was just a hardware store, and everything was sort of like defunct up there for the most part. There wasn't the boom of restaurants that you see now. But next door we have Home Team Barbecue. They just opened a little while ago. John Lewis Barbecue. We have Butcher and Bee's new installation. We have Goat Sheep Cow. Revelry Brewing Company is our neighbors. So you can walk to all of that's in, you know, 2 minute walking distance from us. So it's a really cool, I call it a food campus.
It was kind of Charleston living. I mean, you have outdoor, like kind of covered barn, and that's what I love. It's like outdoor
the Bower.
Drinking.
Yeah, yeah. So we try to, I mean, one of the advantages we have in Charleston is it only gets really cold for maybe 2 months out of the year. So to have an outdoor seating area is such a boon if you can fit it in. So we actually had a local guy build all of that hardwood for us offsite. He came in. There's no nails in that thing. The Bower is what we're talking about, this giant wooden outdoor seating area. Seats probably about 100. Would you say 100, Timmons?
Yeah, I think it's 100.
Yeah.
Yep.
Plus our courtyard area. So we really try to take advantage of that.
So tell me the backstory on Edmunds Oast. It's some kind of historical.
Well, the name itself, I'll turn that over to Timmons because he is sort of our resident beer historian for Charleston. But yeah, it was named after a guy, Edmund Egan. And an oast is an English hop drying kiln, but that's all I'll say about it.
So yeah, Edmund Egan was a brewer the late 1700s down here. Kind of got the title the Rebel Brewer because he helped fund the Revolution and had the largest brewery in the area. Was very popular. Beer was getting exported to the Northeast from here. So yeah, we kind of took his namesake as part of the restaurant.
And when you go to your website, the Edmund's Oast website, there's a little backstory there. It was like 1760 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was right downtown. I think he had about 10 people working in the brewery. But yeah, he was a huge supporter of the Revolution, and so made sense to get him integrated into the name.
And, well, and what's the oast? There's that term, the oast.
So an oast is just an old school hop drying kiln, typically used in England. You still see them around today. A lot of them have been converted into houses. It kind of looks like a windmill without the fan on the top, you know. And it's just so they could put hops in there, and they would have a heat source underneath, so the hops would cure. You know, they would dry because hops are wet flowers when they're harvested, and they need to become more stable and dry out so they can be used in brewing. So,
you know, I'm definitely interested in the history of Charleston culinary as well as beer. You know, this is the wine and food festival, but I feel
okay.
Like there's, you know, a rise of breweries now in this area. But again, tell us more about the history of Charleston area for breweries. And did you write a book about it as well? So tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a book called Charleston Beer, pretty obvious name. It came out about 6 years ago about the history of brewing in the area and modern brewing. At that time, there was really only 4 breweries to write about. Now we're well over 20, so it's definitely exploded. A lot of that has to do with some legal changes and stuff that happened with our state laws. The first brewery to open after Prohibition was Palmetto. That was 1993. And then the next new brewery in the Charleston area wasn't until 2007. So we've seen the growth really spike in the last few years in the state and locally.
You know, I tried some Palmetto Pils yesterday. I know David, our engineer, was drinking it at the hotel.
Oh, it's good stuff.
So they were the first brewery since Prohibition. What happened from Prohibition to 1993 in South Carolina?
Absolutely nothing.
Not a lot as far as drinking beer goes.
Yeah. I mean, at the time when they opened, it's a great story of them trying to get funding and then working with the state. The state had no idea how to license a brewery. So they were, you know, hand marking through restaurant licensing forms. It was a whole ordeal. But they really paved the way for everybody to come after.
And you guys brought some beer, too.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to tap it. We'll get some cups and we'll drink some beer as we usually do on the show.
Absolutely.
So anything else about South Carolina going back to, you know, in 19th century, before Civil War? I mean, were there active breweries in Charleston?
Sure, yeah. So, and speaking of Palmetto, that was probably the other large brewery. They were around from about the 1850s, changed their name to Germania in the late 1800s, and they were done before Prohibition. South Carolina had Prohibition before the nation did, so we were first to the bunch.
When did you guys start Prohibition?
I think it was 1960.
Oh, it wasn't us. We didn't start Prohibition.
You didn't start
Prohibition.
Don't
blame us. No.
You guys.
Come on, man.
But it's funny because, like, you know, we're talking, you know, we're from New York City. Everyone thinks it's really liberal and, you know, the drinking laws are pretty liberal. But you guys have a big connection to New York. It seems like you know all the New York brewers that I know.
Well, we try to stay in the beer scene. So we try to stay relevant. We try to see who's doing what. Scott Shore, who's the owner of Edmund's Oast, he is from Long Island along with his sister, Lauren Shore. Lauren owns a wonderful distributorship, Rafa Distribution, which is South Carolina only right now. And then, so their connections, our friends, etc. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a cool beer community to be in.
Hey, can somebody get us some cups maybe from the Breville over there? This Breville, these guys are doing coffee right here in our tent. This is the TP tent.
Woo!
Heritage Radio Network TP tent live at Charleston Wine and Food. And Breville's over there. Thanks for the coffee, guys.
That stuff was
good. They're
going to
give us some free cups so we can drink the beer.
Yeah.
But Edmund's Oast, man. So, yeah, Lauren Shore, I knew her. Her buddy Ben Wood. Oh, nice. Glassware.
Glassware
from Stetzel. Wow.
Oh.
We have custom glassware here.
It's going to make our beer taste all the better.
But Lauren Shore was, you know, there's so many great traditions. She was working with Ben Wood when it was Van Bergen to Wolf, and I knew them in New York City, Jimmy's Number 43. And that was our connection. Last week you guys had a festival, Brewvival.
Right, yeah. That's been for 6 years now?
How long? It's actually the 8th year.
Oh, my God.
Time flies.
And our good buddies, I think Joe and Chris DeChico from DeChico's Markets were there and posted on Facebook, and they made the introduction for me. I didn't really know. That's why, other than Westbrook, I didn't really know much about. you're seen down here.
Joe and Chris are the nicest guys in the world, as far as I'm concerned. I had the fortune, the good fortune to go to a couple of their markets maybe about a year ago up in New York, and it's shocking. I'm sure you know this more than anyone. You know, when you go to their... Thank you. When you go to their...
Just going to pour some beers for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, no. Please do. Yeah, Gilded first. That would be good. When you go to their stores, you would expect it just to be sort of a, you know, just a kind of a badass supermarket. But then you go to the beer section, and it's just astounding. One of their markets, I can't remember which one, we go up a flight of stairs, and we're sort on a mezzanine above the market itself, and it's just more beers than you can shake a stick at. They have a... thank you, Timmons. They have a bar up there. I mean, it's killer. So, anyway...
Now, New York's come a long way with their beer laws, and there's grocery stores that have beer bars in them now, and it's nice seeing that you guys are going in that direction. So tell Edmunds, so last night I got in, sat at the outdoor bar, was welcomed by our good buddy, what was the bartender?
Tavner. Yeah.
So it was pleasant that he actually knew who I was. He'd been to Jimmy's Number 43 a lot in New York City.
Yeah.
So we had a great time. I tried the stewed pole beans. Cool. I had the spring onions dish. And I was drinking your IPA a lot, and
well,
I really
thanks,
enjoyed
man.
It.
Much appreciated. Yeah, we have about a dozen beers on tap now. They it sort of changes. We make all kinds of stuff, light to dark to sour to not sour, barrel-aged, funky, weird, whatever, sort of whatever our whim is. We brought out the easy-drinking stuff first. This beer that we have in our glasses is called Gilded. So it's a Belgian-style table beer, about 3.7% alcohol by volume, so hopefully a day-drinking kind of beer, because it is noon right now.
It's my first beer of the day.
Hey, man, cheers.
I had loved the Breville coffee, but at some point, my stomach says, I need beer, guys.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully this will ease you right back into it. I don't know if you're like me, but last night, some of the fringe events for Charleston Food & Wine, let's just say, probably stayed out a little past my bedtime.
So you guys as locals, what did you do in context of the Charleston Wine and Food Festival? Go to certain events, after parties?
You mean just for fun? I mean, last night, so we're opening up a larger brewery, so there's sort of not a lot of time to go out as much as I would like right now. But I did make it to Faculty Lounge, which is a local Charleston bar. I can't recommend that place enough. Locals.
Could you say it one more time?
Yeah. Faculty Lounge. And then our head bartender, Jace McConnell, was doing a collaborative event with Kimball House from Decatur, Georgia. And so they did sort of a bar takeover over there. And it was, it was a good time.
What did they serve? Was it cocktails? Was
it
beers?
Cocktails. Yeah, a lot of different cocktails. Just a flurry of different ones with, cocoa syrup and coffee syrup and rum and pineapple and, probably about a dozen, or so.
You having flashbacks?
Yeah. My stomach shuddered a little bit when I started naming the ingredients.
So you're from this area?
I'm from the upstate of South Carolina, which is about 3 hours away from here. I moved here. I went to college here, and then I tried to get in the beer business, and I failed miserably. Finally eased my way in, and I started working for Scott Shore at his retail store in Greenville. We were going to open Edmunds Oast. I moved down here to be the beer buyer and brewer and beer dude. So,
where did you learn to brew?
Around. Different breweries, I sort of go to and hang out and talk to brewers. I was an avid home brewer since I was 20. I read a lot of books, talked to a lot of people. I mean, just, immersed myself.
So. Since it's just you guys, let's talk more about beer. So this is the Gilded.
This is one of our, one of our more popular beers. It's really easy drinking. It's something that you can give people. So it still has a lot of flavor. So if you smell it, you taste it, just like wine. It probably has some melon notes to it, some banana notes, maybe even some strawberry notes. But like I said, it's only 3.7. It's not bitter. It's not sour. It's not aggressive. It's really easy drinking.
Even though this is the wine festival, I did see there's a craft beer village here. So do you feel like that Charleston's?
Yeah.
What are some places to get good beer besides Edmunds Oast? Because do you feel like it's coming up as a craft beer town?
Absolutely. I mean, Timmons, you can probably name a ton of local breweries and just.
There's so many, I honestly can't keep up anymore, but there's probably 25 now. And so we're opening a production brewery a little north of the restaurant on King Street. And just within that area, there's going to be three others popping up right around us. So it's growing exponentially. And yeah. The city's thirsty. Everyone's doing business. Everyone's expanding. We're in a good place right now.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have Westbrook on later, right? Westbrook Brewing yeah. Company. So Westbrook, we talked about Revelry. We talked about Palmetto, Holy City. I'm going to leave out some
Morgan,
coasts.
Morgan Westbrook's going to be on at around 2 o'clock today.
Oh, she's great.
If you're listening, guys. Yeah. And this is a great party. So this is the Locals Day. We're in the Culinary Village, which is Marion Square in the heart of old Charleston. You know, this is a really cool place.
Oh, it's beautiful, and it's a perfect time of year, too. I mean, it's, what is it now, March? Are we in March? It's just a little bit chilly outside, which is nice. This is about as nice as it gets in Charleston. I think it's really hard to beat this weather. You come in the summer, and it's just blazing hot, which some people love, some people hate. The good news is we have the beaches, so you go and you cool off and, you know. But, it's a beautiful place, historical, gorgeous.
Do you think that there's a cultural divide in consumers in this area between wine drinkers and beer drinkers, or do you think more people are getting turned on to craft beer?
Well, one of the fun things about our place, Edmund's Oast, is that we aren't just a brewery. We aren't just a beer bar. We have we give attention to every beverage program or every beverage that we serve equally. So we really love beer, but we really love wine, and we really love spirits, and we love cocktails and et cetera, and coffee and everything else. So I think there is a crossover. I think we're trying to, explore that crossover as much as possible. One of the things that I like about our crew, you know, Timmons included, and our wine buyer, Brandon Underwood, and Scott Shore, the owner, and I mean, just about everyone who works there, is that we are just a bunch of beverage nerds. It's not that we only like beer, that we only like wine, but we'll get in a cool batch, you know, a bottle of beer or something, we'll talk about it and drink it and say, oh man, this is really cool, or we nerd out on the cocktails that Jace is making or whatever, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I think people who enjoy good stuff, you know, food, drink, I think the crossover is natural. I think people just get a little, it's easy to stay in your comfort zone, you know? And some people are say, oh no, I just like wine, or I just like beer, or whatever. But I think once people give whatever their respective beverage is not a chance.
I'll tell you right now, it's almost like 12:15 or so. Festival is just kicking off local day here, Charleston Wine and Food Fest. You can hear the music playing. You know, across from us, there's a Williams-Sonoma demo. We got the Big Green Egg. Our sponsors are outside cooking away, and I'm having a great time with you guys. Let's talk about food. So, you know, Low Country, I'm not going to get into Charleston food trivia with you guys, but in terms of the menu, that we will later, though. We have some trivia coming up.
Oh, fun.
I got some tough questions. If you do your homework, look up Chef Bill Neal, who was one of the first kind of Charleston Low Country chefs that took some classics and turned the knob up. But at your place, I was really surprised and encouraged by the food. I felt like you guys really represented Low Country food. And tell us what it is. Is it stewed pole beans? And talk about some of the menu items and the influences on your menu.
Well, our chef, Reed, I'm going to say his last name wrong because I do that. Hinninger? Am I saying that right, Timmons?
Oh, that's perfect.
Hinninger? Reed Hinninger, our head chef.
Timmons, Tavner,
Reed Cameron. Yeah.
Sure.
Underwood. Old time.
We're complicated.
Yeah, we got a crew.
Edmund's Oast.
God, I tell you, the worst thing is when we have to set up accounts. You know, we're going to buy hops or something, and then, you know, okay, what's the name of your company? Edmund's Oast. Excuse me, can you say it? I'll just spell it. It's fine. Oats? No, it's Oast. Just, you're going to have to trust me on this one, you know.
But well, it's a different culture here, right? I mean, you got different food culture. You got different names.
No, well, so what's really cool and what Reed does at our
Timmons.
Place. Timmons. Is in what his guys do. I mean, it's a culinary team back there in the kitchen. You know, one of the things that they're big on, which sounds almost cliche now, but it's such a cool thing, is that they're sourcing from local farms. So the pigs that we get in for our charcuterie are relatively locally raised pigs on locally raised produce. The fish is caught off the South Carolina coast. You know, the vegetables are from farms in Charleston. I mean, it's all right here. And, you know, we don't advertise it that much. We're not that there's anything wrong with this, but we don't say that we're a farm-to-table restaurant or something.
You guys,
like that.
The best food I had in Charleston was at Edmund's Oast.
Oh, well, thank you.
It really was. It was because of what I wanted and expected. Tell me about the stewed pole beans.
I haven't had that
yet. I don't know
yet.
Well, it's It's like these fatter beans. Mm-hmm. They're stewed, but there's little pieces of pork in there.
Well, that's how you make greens taste good, is you add meat. So, just
kidding.
Are
pole beans a bean, or are they more of a green?
Well, they're green, right?
They're green, yeah.
Yeah, that's what counts.
So you cook them like greens.
Yeah. Make anything healthy taste better.
So basically, you took the beans, you cooked them like collard greens with a little bit of meat.
Right. And I can't speak to Reed's process on that. But, yeah, I mean, I know one of the things he likes to talk about, he shares with the staff some of his food philosophy every once in a while, and it's just so cool to hear. He loves to make a vegetable the star of the plate, you know? So he'll make a composed dish around, say, roasted cauliflower. And you don't even you're not waiting for the meat. You're not missing the meat. You're not missing anything. I mean, it's a full...
It's called a beer number two.
It's such a...
Got to catch up, Cam.
Oh, God. Sorry. I'm talking too much.
No, you're good. I want to know more, too, about your brewing history. Because before 1993, what did people drink for beer in South Carolina? Just the big brands?
Miller Coors, man. Oh. But, no Miller, right? That was probably... I don't know when they came across the Rockies or the Mississippi. Anyway. But, yeah, I don't know.
But those are the brands that shall be unnamed. We can't name those brands.
I mean, in 93, I was 8, so I wasn't drinking too much. You know, a little bit. Little Coors. My dad's a Coors Light guy, actually. Yeah, the Silver Bullet. So that was my first beer.
Cheers, man.
Yeah, it's awful.
So more about, low country cooking. What are some places that I would go in Charleston that represent, think of as Charleston?
Yeah, I'm gonna rattle off some names. If anyone's listening and I leave someone out, my apologies. The thing is, I think anyone who knows Charleston, anyone who comes to Charleston, is immediately overwhelmed by the amount of talented chefs, good food, places to eat around here. One of the ones that gets a lot of attention, obviously, is Husk, McCrady's, the Sean Brock thing, Monero. I mean, absolutely spectacular, spectacular food. Mike Lotta at Fig, The Ordinary, you can't do better than those. In my mind. But there's a lot of new places opening up, too, and a lot of sort of places that you might not think about that just have really excellent whatever they're doing. One of my favorites, I'll sneak out for lunch every once in a while and go to Xiao Bao Biscuit, which is an Asian-inspired place. It's just their mapo tofu, right? Szechuan peppercorns, tofu. It's a restorative. It's a healing bowl of tofu. Yeah, mouth numbing. Exactly.
Tim's getting excited. I'm getting hungry, too. Have you guys been around the festival yet? Is there anything I should eat today?
Oh, I haven't. No, this is our first time. This is our first time in this area. Where should we go?
Well, I don't know yet. I just got here, too. Trying to figure out. But the different guests we have today, I know we got some guys from Paw Paw Restaurant and Prohibition Bar coming on some point. And then we got some chefs coming from some Georgia. If... Papa comes in, or Prohibition, we'll get to sit with them.
Cool.
More food. So seafood down here.
Oh, yeah.
Last night I was at the Darling Oyster Bar downtown, and I had little neck clams, which in the north are usually bigger. They were very small and delicate. Is all the seafood from around here?
I hope so.
That you get in most places?
Yeah, I would hope so. I know a lot of the oysters that I nerd out over at, like, The Ordinary or wherever do come from different places around the country. But, a lot of the seafood I know comes off the coast. But, again, it's each chef and their process.
Yeah, our oyster season are the months with an R. So any month that doesn't have an R, that oyster's probably from somewhere else. But still carefully selected at a place like Darling, you get good stuff.
So months with the R.
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, I got that backwards.
So you got March.
Mm-hmm. But it's cold.
So you got September to March. And April,
right.
Too, right? April.
April.
Then May you might... not want it. I was wondering about Southern American oysters and shellfish, because again, I'm from New England, so we have Massachusetts, Maine, and even a lot of stuff from Canada, and it stays cold, but still they say the summer months you're not supposed to get them. But
yeah,
I usually end up getting little neck clams and other things, lobsters. I love seafood. There's something called the Carolina the muddle. Have you ever had that?
The Carolina muddle.
Muddle.
You're putting over on us.
I'm getting this is back to Bill Neal and some low country food history.
Hmm.
It's going to be on our trivia questions later.
Oh.
Carolina muddle.
Little hint.
But,
that's new to me, yeah.
I'll give you a hint. It's got some, it's one of those kind of old school just stews.
Oh.
You got some stuff from the sea and some stuff from pork.
Like a low country broil kind of thing?
Something boil? Like that. Not too much seasoning. Mm-hmm. And are there any special like flavors that happen down here? Like, is there spicy food? Is there lemongrass? You know, is there a certain type of flavor that you guys use, or is it more about fresh and local?
I think one of the awesome things about seeing food evolve down here is it's become more than just Southern inspired. And I love Southern food. I'm from South Carolina, but there's not just one style of cuisine. I mean, Cam mentioned Zabba Biscuit. That's one of my favorite places as well, but that's a stellar Asian place. I mean, there's sort of whatever you like. We've got a good version of, I don't know if everything is the right word, but
no.
There's a lot of variety. It's not, we're not all kind of running down the same lane with food.
I like to make fun of the grain nerds, as I call them, which I say that with the most endearing way I can. I'm kind of a little bit tuned to that because as a brewer, we use grains to make beer. So, you know, whenever we can make beer with local grains or something, it's fun for us. It's nice. It's, you know, to connect back to your to the land a little bit. But, you know, Anson Mills up in Columbia, you know, they're taking a lot of heirloom grains and things and sort of making them sexy again, if you will.
And name a few of the grains that they're using.
I mean, corn, barley,
corn.
Wheat.
Jimmy Red corn.
Yeah.
Carolina Gold Rice they brought back. I mean, they're reviving these heirloom varieties of seeds that were lost and replanting them and repopulating them, and it's very cool. So you're tasting what food probably tasted like, you know, when that was really, there's really a lot of rice plantations.
I like that, guys. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Culinary and beer history, guys.
Yeah.
So for you guys at the brewery, are you using, you know, just regular barley, or are you using any South Carolina-grown grains or malts?
Yeah, absolutely. We've done both. So, you know, I like to get some good English grains in, some good German grains in for our lager beers and that kind of thing. But
Lager,
it has to be a perfect Pilsner.
We're just getting warmed up, kids.
But
trust us, hang out for the next hour. It's going to get livelier.
But yeah, so there's a great
beer number two.
Wait till we get to number three. It's going to get really weird. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
David wants a Palmetto Pils. Give me a Palmetto Pils for the engineer.
We have a whole growler of Gilded with your name on it, man. It's right here. You can anytime. Yeah.
It's called on-air lubrication.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Doesn't sound right, but... Yeah.
It's not quite Palmetto Pills, but, you know, it's golden.
David Tadashore, engineer. So, grains in your beer.
Yeah, so there's a really cool malt house right outside of Asheville, North Carolina, called Riverbend, that we buy from time and again. They've taken North Carolina varieties of wheat and rye, and they've taken Virginia barley, and they malt it to their specifications. They toast it in-house, and they sell it to brewers. And their flavors that you get from their grain, they're not like the stuff you get from Germany. It's not like the stuff you get from England. It's not like the stuff you get from Wisconsin. You know, it's very specific to them, and it gives it a very specific character. It's a little bit, it can be challenging to brew with sometimes, but that's what makes it fun, you know. But we did there's another. So Geechee Boy, are you familiar with Geechee Boy Mills?
No.
It's this local mill, right? And I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he revived a type of rye called Seashore Rye, right? And so we get this stuff, and he just brings some over to us. He's like, you want to make a beer with it? It's like, yeah, of course. So to use it in the brew house, we have to do this really sort of gnarly method where we cook the ever-living snot out of it and, you know, sort of turn it into hot napalm, basically, and add it to the beer. But, again, the flavor you get from it and through that process is just sort of a kind of a rye depth that I think is hard to get otherwise.
Is your brewery set up to do small batches like that, experiment with different grains? So I know some bigger breweries don't want to just do a one-off batch with an unproven kind of local malt.
Yeah. Well, we can do, effectively right now, we can do three sizes. We can do 10, if we're really worried about something, we can do 10 gallons, so that's nothing, right? Which is our little pilot system. Or we can do 5 barrels, which is 10 kegs. Or we can do 10 barrels, which is 20 kegs. So, yeah, we're a very flexible little brewery.
And that's about to change. That's the brewery that's actually part of the restaurant, which is technically, in South Carolina, you call it a brew pub. That's a legal definition. But production brewery is going to be much larger.
Oh, yeah. We're, knock on wood, we're a couple months out from firing up our big 30-barrel brewery right up the road. So you'll get Edmunds. Yeah. Thank you.
They like it. Breville guys like it.
Yeah.
Breville sounds like a brewery, too. I guess they're brewing coffee, right?
Well, without coffee, there would be no beer. I think that's the takeaway.
Well, you need the coffee to get started in the morning.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we run out of coffee, you might as well just shut the doors.
Talk about locals again. I'm gonna give a big shout out too from the era of like 70s and 80s when Charleston restaurants were really picking up, getting attention. Great chef John Taylor. He is at the festival this weekend. I knew him because years ago he found some guys growing heirloom corn on a mountain in Georgia, and he sells the chefs, kind of direct mail, some really great. It's called Hoppin' John's Grits. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Sounds familiar.
But I like the idea of heirloom, local corns and things. But he's a chef that's here today too. We know a lot of other chefs that are here, like Billy Durney from Hometown Barbecue in New York City just told me he's down here. Jean-Paul Bourgeois, who's from Louisiana, he's a New York City chef at Blue Smoke. He's around. I think tonight the big event also, it's called Toasted. It's like at the old cigar factory not too far from here.
Oh, is that the closing event?
It's the closing event with the barbecue chefs.
Oh, cool.
So I think if you got a badge, you can go to that. So we're going to try to hit that.
How do we get a badge?
Well, you got to, talk to the event director, Aaron, who's a good buddy. Uh-huh. So let's keep going. So that's the second beer.
That's the second one. So this is...
I already finished it.
You're doing good.
There's more.
Yeah. But these custom, like Charleston Wine and Food custom glassware from a fancy glass company. I like it. So.
Makes it taste that much better. So this is one of our IPAs that we do pretty regularly. It's called Bound by Time. Cheers. Cheers. And that just references, to a degree that when you make an IPA and you put hops in it, it's such a delicate thing at that moment, kind of like a butterfly. If you don't drink it quickly, if you don't treat it well, if you don't speed up that process, then the beer really falls off quickly. So you're sort of bound by time, if you will, when you make an IPA. So about 6% alcohol by volume this batch. Super tropical, fruity, orange, all the juicy flavors that you want.
And last night, the IPA on tap at Edmund's O's, what was
probably
that?
This.
Same one.
Yeah, you're probably doing the same
I liked
thing.
It. I really
well,
did
thanks,
like
man.
It.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you guys have New York connections. I didn't realize how close Charleston was to New York City.
You make my it sound like we're in the mafia, man.
My flight was less than 2 hours. The pilot got on the plane and says, well, the good news is our flight's 30 minutes shorter than expected, which I've never heard. And then he made a joke. He says, the bad news is it's 25 degrees and windy, which is what New York was. But it was 60 degrees when we got here.
Yeah.
It's beautiful this time of year. It is about 25 degrees in New York today.
Oh, that sounds absolutely terrible.
That's why my throat is like this. But talk about New York City connections. So you guys have different brewers. I know Yeppe from Evil Twin used to come down a lot and make beer out of Westbrook, which is just across the way in Mount Pleasant.
Yeah, we've done a collaboration beer with Yeppe. We did it actually, I think... That was served first at our food and wine dinner like 2 years ago or something.
I think that's right.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, he's a good friend. He's a funny guy. He's probably one of the funniest brewers that I've met. They make exceptional beer. Just really cool. I mean, New York's just such a cool ass place. I don't know if I could live there. I don't know if I could afford to live there. But anytime I can visit...
I can't afford to live there.
No, God. But anytime I can visit islands...
See, my jackets get frays and, my shoes have holes in them. I'm like the New York City pauper.
Yeah, hey, man, I'm with you, But visiting is killer. I mean, if I could, I'd spend a month there out of the year and just... I mean, it's
such a... Come up and do a brewery tour.
Yeah, I mean, just walking around. I mean, it's such a different atmosphere than Charleston. I mean, we take this for granted. The trees and the green and the sky and the low building. I mean, there's a law. Maybe you can speak to this, Simmons. There's a law in Charleston that you can't have a building above a church steeple. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's where the Holy City name comes
from.
And I think we're starting to probably get close to that limit with some of these hotels that are coming up. But skyline is mainly church steeples. So that's where the Holy City
moniker. So more Charleston, general info. So you say it's... There's a nickname, the Holy City?
Yeah, the Holy City.
And what else? This is the low country. Does that mean the land's low?
Or is there it's a lower elevation, so we're kind of close to sea level. That's Charleston, Beaufort, Hilton Head. That would all be sort of low country, sort of the bottom right-hand corner on a map.
What are some other things that I should know about Charleston? The Holy City, I didn't know it was. There's Holy City Brewing, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they've actually kind of, they have sort of a skyline as part of their brewery logo, and you see those church steeples. That's what it comes from.
Oh, that makes sense. I get that now.
See?
I didn't know that.
And how did you guys get palm trees? That's
We imported them.
I feel like I'm in Italy or something.
Yeah.
It's like somewhere between Mexico and Italy. There's like sun, there's a breeze off the water. You really bring in the palm trees yourself? Is that part of what you guys are doing?
I have an import company, palm tree import
company. The brewery connection.
Yeah, that's our New York connection. We know a guy, he's got palm trees. Comes from Italy. They're very good. They're very good palm trees.
And then you got Ash Wednesday. What's the thing they do? Palm Sunday, right? So you got the Holy City, you need the palms for Palm Sunday.
No, that's Catholicism, man.
That's different.
We're very Protestant down here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't put palms on the street and have your holy relics carried to church?
I don't know what we're talking about.
No,
anymore.
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
I got excited.
I'm gonna back away. Back away slowly.
No religion and no politics on this show.
Okay, fair.
We can talk about beer politics. So the other big law that changed about 5 years ago in South Carolina, what was that? Because you went from having no breweries to having breweries.
Right.
But there was something holding you guys back. Well, what was the law?
The first kind of bridge to cross was what we called Pop the Cap. That happened here a couple years after it did in North Carolina. They had a similar name for it. But the highest ABV a beer could have in the state was about 6.25%. And that was just a relic of old laws that had to be changed. If you're a brewer and you want to have any kind of variety, you need, you know, something stronger than that. So that was 2007. And the Coast Brewing crew, Jamie Tenney specifically, was very instrumental in getting that passed. They opened in 2007 that same year. Then the next probably three or four, okay, you can have strong beer, but you can't taste beer at a brewery. So why would you ever go? So then we had a tasting bill that would allow you to taste 4 4-ounce samples. Then we had a pint bill that would allow you to order a pint, and just sort of slowly dragging the state out of the Stone Age of brewing. So there's still some more bridges to cross, but you can go to a brewery as an adult and drink a pint of beer like a normal person. I mean, we're doing good
Bless
things.
Yeah.
What about, used to be able to
what
do
about
that.
Beer sales to go? Like in New York, pretty much anyone with any kind of beer license, you can buy a growler beer to go. Even if you're a grocery store, you can buy cans of beer to go. Can you do that at your brew pub?
Yeah, so not at a brew pub.
You can get growlers to go to brew pub. Theoretically, you can get bottles to go to brew pub. But as the law stands right now, if you're a regular old brew pub, you can't sell to a wholesaler, and we can't sell to retailers. So we're only limited to sales outside of inside our own walls, rather, if that makes sense.
And then when you open your production brewery,
we'll
what license
everywhere.
Is that on? How is that going to be different?
Well,
that's a brewery and a brew pub have that distinction of brew pub you can sell within your four walls, brewery you can distribute. In this state, you still have to go through a distributor, so we have a three-tier system that's mandated. You can, as a customer, come and buy beer to go, but I think you're still limited to 288 ounces, which is like a case per person per day.
Cam, I know you're laughing about it, but I think that in this country, one thing that good is happening is that state by state, everyone's getting that beer is good for business.
Mm-hmm,
people
absolutely.
Like beer, and all the laws are being rolled out. You know, New York did it, and it sounds like it's happening here too.
Yeah, man.
So cheers to
cheers.
Beer laws and rolling
absolutely.
Them out. Who likes beer? I do. Come on. We're going to give away an I Like Beer t-shirt, too, in a little bit. So we're going to give away one an hour. So
nice.
It's the custom made in New York City. Designer Daniel Birch at Big Spokes. Check him out on Instagram.
Nice plug.
All right.
Are we ready for the last beer?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Don't say last beer because this is only my third beer.
Oh, sorry.
We're not done yet.
No,
maybe some of our
no.
guests can come up and try some, too, you guys.
Yeah,
you
we got
want to come
plenty.
Up and try some of the Edmund's Oast. You got to get a glass, though.
I wouldn't pour him this one, Timmons. This is a special beer only for...
This is for us, and you give him the Gilded. You're going to take David's growler and start passing it out? Can't do that to David.
So before we drink this one, I need you to know this is honestly one of the weirdest beers we've ever made. So brace yourself for flavor.
Yeah. But you guys, come on up. He's going to pour you the other one to you. Just line up here and, might as well have some fun. This is a live show. So before you get the beer, give him that mic, Timmons. You guys have to say your name and what town you're from. So I can hear, I want some local color or tourist color. So say your name, where you're from.
Steve from Earl's Inlet.
All right.
Ooh, Merle's Inlet. I had a girlfriend from
Merle's Inlet.
All right, now you guys get beer. So you got to say your name to get beer.
You want me to hold your glass?
You keep talking, Cam. So laws and beer laws.
Oh, the fun stuff.
We're going to go Foss for everybody?
No. Go Gilded.
Okay.
Holy God, don't give him that.
I'm trying to protect everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. Got to protect you from
the beer laws.
Man.
We want to leave with a good taste in your mouth.
What's the one that we're drinking, Cam?
So this is a really odd beer. So there's an old Slavic style of beer called Kvass, K-V-A-S-S, right? And so what that was way back when, theoretically, I wasn't around again, but what I've read and what I've heard is that they would take bread and they would add water and they would let it
next
ferment.
Next guy, you just say your name, where you're from. We'll keep talking.
Yeah.
We can have two people talking at once on this one.
I'm Shay Hester and I'm from right here in Charleston.
All right, man.
Nice. What you guys are drinking, not what we're drinking. What you guys are drinking is Gilded. It's a Belgian-style table beer. Really light, refreshing, fruity. Should be perfect for day drinking. In my mind.
What's your name, man?
I'm Sarah, and this is my husband, Seth. Yep. And we're from Charleston, and we love Edmund's Oaks.
Oh, thanks,
all
guys.
Right. Welcome. So, kvass.
So, yeah. So, they would take bread and add water and basically make kind of a homemade hooch, if you will. Typically, it was rye bread. And then they would flavor it with things like mint and raisins sometimes and beets. So, what we did is we found a local, one of the coolest bakeries ever, Root Baking Company, here in Charleston, South Carolina. Chris Wilkins is the guy's name. He makes some killer freaking bread. Go buy his stuff. But we started talking about this, and he baked us a rye bread. We took that rye bread, we added it to oak barrels, we put beer into the oak. We didn't add any brewer's yeast, we only added the culture that he uses to get his starter, dough going.
It was like a live bread.
Yeah. So, he gave us a big jug of this stuff. It was just like an amorphous. Have you seen Ghostbusters 2? You know, the slime? It was like that. Yeah, so we added that to the barrel.
Saw Ghostbusters 1, but.
Ah, Jesus. And we.
I'm a radio guy, I don't watch movies.
Yeah. Oh, cheers.
Cheers. Cheers to the kvass.
Cheers. And so we added that. We let it ferment really rapidly. This is only 2.6% alcohol by volume. But when you taste it, it's got a lot of acidity to it, so it's pretty sour. We have another beer.
Hello, Mary Nisbet from Charleston.
Yeah.
All right.
Woo! Ooh. So, no, right.
Of Charleston.
Love Charleston. But we added this stuff, fermented it really quickly. Timmons doesn't like it when I say this. It kind of is like pickled bread in a way. Like, this to me tastes kind of like pickled bread. We only have a little bit of it. I don't know if we'll ever be able to make it like we did this again, but in my mind, it's super refreshing.
Wait, you got to get. What's your name, man?
Patricia.
Say, okay.
Patricia from?
Charleston.
Woo.
Is it of Charleston or from Charleston?
Eh.
Of Charleston.
Of Charleston.
Yeah.
Same. But
you know,
anyway.
You gave me a warning on this beer. I thought it was going to be really strong. I can't believe it's only 2.7%.
Strong flavored. It's sour.
There's more flavor than big beers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just got a lot of acidity, which is getting real sexy in brewing these days.
So you are able to do some experimental batches.
Oh, we use some weird beers.
Is this a one-batch beer?
Yeah. We made...
making it again.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love this. It's probably not the one that's going to fly off the shelves the quickest, but that's okay. We made, sort of a half batch of it, and the people who love it absolutely adore it, and we're quite proud of it.
I'm not sure if it's still on, but we did a cask of this with mint and raisins added, which sounds like a terrible idea.
It was outrageously good.
But it was really good.
It was somehow mint, raisin, and pickled bread just frickin' work.
Don't say pickles.
No, I think we should do a trivia and give away one of these T-shirts. Wait a second. Hold that for me.
Hold on.
I got one hand on my mic.
I can't juggle. Okay.
And I think we got some founder or some important person coming on soon.
We're from Edmund's Oast.
Fest chair we're going to bring on in a minute. But Mr. Festival chair, come on up. You guys stay with us. And everybody, come on and say your name. Sit right here next to us here.
Oh, yeah.
And
get him
an extra mic.
Hey, man.
While we're talking Charleston, first, here, Timmons, hold this up. This is one of our original Beer Sessions Radio T-shirts that we made
for
the festival. We hold that up for people. We're going to do a little trivia question and give one away. But let's give him an extra mic.
Yeah, here you
go. Grab that. And thank you so much for coming, sir. Please say your name because we love this festival.
We really appreciate you being back here again this year. My name is Randall Goldman. I'm the board chairman for the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, and can't think of better guys to be sitting next to at this time in the morning than you two. So
loved
listening to you guys talk about the craft that you guys do. You're really one of the best in Charleston, so it's nice to be sitting here with you. Yeah.
So, you guys have come so far. So tell us the origins of the festival. I know it's grown a lot.
It has. Today, this 5-day period is our 12th anniversary. We had over 350 chefs from the local area and from outside, 115 events over the 5 days. And if you look out at this weather, it just could not be any better. It's not a white cloud in the sky.
So you guys are representing the best of Charleston, but also your team. I mean, they're in New York in the fall, and I met them. They're out there recruiting chefs from New York and Portland, Oregon, and you've got wines here from Italy and Oregon. What do you attribute this success to? There's no other festival like this in the country, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you very much. Honestly, it really kind of goes to the ethos of the community and the city at large. We are very much an open-arm city. That's kind of how we were first founded way back, is people escaping somewhere else, wanting to start something new. And so very, very welcoming. It's everybody. It's everybody from the gas station attendant to, you know, the checkout person at the grocery store. It's just, I think we're all just kind of inbred with Southern culture and hospitality.
What are some of your local favorites here? Now, it's my first time in Charleston.
Edmund's Oast, actually.
Edmund's Oast.
Yeah, right here.
So big shout out. Edmund's Oast. What I loved about it, it was the intro to a welcoming Charleston, because it turns out that the bartender, Tavner, knew of my bar from New York City. And then when I needed to get a car into the city, he said Uber, and I said, you know what? I want a local option. And he gave me the number for Green City Taxi, who's been driving me around the whole weekend. So I love those local connections. Anything else? A couple of local connections you want to recommend?
You know, I would meet truly the crew and everybody who made this festival happen. I would strongly suggest going up to Toasted this evening at the Cigar Factory at 6 o'clock. But you know, there's local touch all over this festival. We do have, and very fortunate to have, a lot of wine vendors from around the world, a lot of chefs from around the nation. But there's a lot of locals out here. So come through the culinary tents and the culinary tent and see the local purveyors. Quentin Middleton is out there, just a beautiful knife maker. And again, like these guys have been talking about for the last few minutes, you know, local beers.
This is a beautiful park. So this is called Marion Square?
Marion Square, yes.
And what's some history about this park?
So it used to be part of the Citadel right behind us, which is now a hotel. It used to be the Citadel. So this used to be the parade field for the Citadel back in the day.
It's a great place. I'd like to do a giveaway of the T-shirt to whoever's in the room right now. So we're going to give away a T-shirt. But would you like to think of a question that represents, you know, Charleston history that you'd like to ask? Who wants to take part of this trivia question? Come on. If you win, you're going to get
the
T-shirt. So, think of a question that would represent Charleston to you as a real Charleston person. Put you on the spot. But
No. I think the first one for me when I moved here to Charleston, the one thing that is very identifiable to, in my belief, the area is a certain smell. And
wait, what is it?
Pluff mud.
Pluff mud.
Pluff mud. It's the brackish areas of the coastline when the tide is starting to go out. A very distinctive. And you just, you know, it's one of those things that when you come across the Crossgrove Bridge, you're down near the waterways, that is the one thing that you smell, and you just kind of know that you're home. That and the ringing of the church bells, those are the things that kind of identify Charleston.
Cam, who got the answer? One of the ladies in the front?
I think
come
the lady
on up,
right
you guys
there.
Get, with the we got a T-shirt if you want it. Come on up. All right. Thank you. So Pluff Mud. I'd really like to know more about, you know, the low country cooking. We're going to be talking about Chef Bill Neal later. Did you ever meet him?
Were
you
here? I did.
Tell us about him, because I read the book Remembering Bill Neal in the early 2000s. His wife wrote that book. A lot of chefs started talking about him. But you know, I know he passed too young. But tell us about what he did for Charleston and food around here.
I think it just helped to set the benchmark and kind of helped set the tone. He, along with a lot of other chefs, have really had a great influence over our cuisine, our culture, our style of management, and has added greatly to the culinary talents of the city.
Yeah, and I know. Also, we know John Taylor, who we also know as Hoppin' John.
Yep.
He had a restaurant here for a while too, didn't he?
He certainly did.
And he's here this weekend for the festival, too.
He is, and another classic is Bertha's. It just won America's Classic with the James Beard Foundation a little bit further up on the peninsula, 82 Queen, another great restaurant that's been here, tried and true, for a very, very long time. That's what really makes, those are the folks who we really do look up to, are the, you know, the 82 Queens, is the High Cotton, the Slightly North Abroad, led by Frank Lee. You know, we just have such a deep well of true Charleston restaurateurs here.
You're right about the church bells. On my way over this morning, it must have been around 11:15, all the bells around here were ringing. It's a real special. Where are you from originally?
A little bit of all over. Born in Texas. I've lived abroad. But for the last 19, I moved back 19 years ago from Dallas, Texas, and We started the company Patrick Properties just up the street here back in the days when folks wouldn't even think about crossing Calhoun Street. And now you got folks like Edmunds Oast that is the next line further up the peninsula, keeping the movement going forward. I love any development that's north of me.
And what is it called? It's called North Morrison. What's the district called?
Yeah, North Morrison, Nomo, you know, North, you know, yeah.
The Neck. I think is the old school name for it, but yeah.
I got lucky, you know, it was just by chance that we met these guys because their partner is, you know, his sister's from New York and used to sell beer up there. But that's like the new Mecca. They have you guys, Edmunds Oast. Next door is Butcher and Bees. Yep. There's Ravelry Brewing. And what else is around there? It's like the coolest place in Charleston.
Lewis Barbecue just opened up there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Lewis, absolutely spectacular. He's a Texas
home
transplant.
Team, right? Home team barbecue. So,
yeah, home team barbecue, absolutely spectacular. You know, we have, what is it, Goat Sheep Cow. They moved up from the Broad Street area, and they have a new outpost up there.
And Tattooed Moose has been there for longer than
they're
anyone.
They're the OG,
that's
man.
That's a classic.
OG. Big shout-out to Tattooed Moose, for sure. That Duck Club is for real. You need that in your life.
Good. So we're all going to be at this. We'll see you tonight at the Toasted event.
Absolutely will. Yeah, 6 o'clock, 6 to 8 this evening. It is the a great just coming together. Everybody kind of lets their hair down and just has a really, really good time.
You know, other chefs told me about some of the events they were part of that have already passed. I heard about the Shuck event, which was yesterday. Yep. Where was that held? Because I heard that was one of the best events. Roasted oysters.
That was a really popular one. Last night, we also had the great tribute dinner to Daniel Ballou, which was very well attended. Another pioneer in our industry. Great influences all across across America and in the world. So, yeah.
It was great. You want to say anything else? Or you want to hang out with us?
No, just really, you know, you guys were here last year. I love this teepee. Really appreciate it. Appreciate your enthusiasm and truly what you do for our industry. It really means a lot to us. So thank you for coming out here and giving me a couple minutes on the mic. I appreciate it. And again, just shout out to my friends next to me here, Edmunds Oast. You guys are just absolutely crushing it. Beautiful facility. Lots of thought went into building that. And you guys just have one of the best charcuterie programs that are here in town. So hats off to you guys for being as successful as you are.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. I don't know, we staying live, David, or are we going to? We'll take a break. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back. Thanks for joining me on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network, live from Charleston Wine and Food Festival. All right. Woo!
This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills. In business since 1974, they've transformed ancient cooking vessels into modern-day masterpieces. Today, they sell 7 sizes of the egg, as well as hundreds of accessories designed to make your cooking fun, entertaining, and delicious. Often copied but never equaled, the Big Green Egg is the ultimate cooking experience. Learn more at biggreenegg.com. This episode is also brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association Seal of Approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.